You're with Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You know, for about 5 years now, Canberra has been, I guess, contaminated by this amazing allegation of rape that occurred in its house at night, allegedly, that long ago. And we've just had this incredible saga that seems to develop just when we think that the last chapter has been written. It's been quite amazing. And we've had this defamation hearing, which has kind of digressed into various tangents. And, you know, we've discovered more about what happened then through this defamation case than at any other stage. Even a couple of days ago, we learnt from a deposition that was released only on Monday that there was a suggestion that Brittany Higgins may have been drugged. That has never been raised until then. So it just keeps cascading. Well, another story has hit the headlines in the last 3 hours. This has come out of the Sydney Morning Herald, and it's about Bruce Learman given his marching orders at the place where he lives. He's been told to get out. A full volume rendition of I've Had the Best Time of My Life blasting out in the middle of the night, along with other raucous karaoke outbursts, has led to a landlord giving Bruce Learman his marching orders. Now, the owner of the multi-million dollar North Sydney house into which the accused rapist and avowed party animal moved recently after leaving his Seven Network home at Balgala, he's been evicted from the premises, it was confirmed today. In return for an exclusive interview following the collapse of Learman's Canberra rape trial, Seven Spotlight paid the Liberal staffers accommodation for a year. You know all of that. I had no knowledge of Learman was there for how long, says the owner, of this particular North Sydney apartment, but she was appalled and upset to hear her tenants were causing such an uproar in the normally peaceful neighbourhood. Well, there was a time when North Sydney wasn't that peaceful. You had blueberries and other places of nightclub action where North Sydney was the place of pace. But anyway, I digress. Apparently, this house is worth about $4.1 million. I would never have wanted strangers partying in my home, said the landlord. Apparently, the items that were in the house have been loaded onto a ute this morning, and they are going. There are photographs being taken by the Sydney Morning Herald showing Bruce Learman's photographs. Bruce Learman's belongings being taken out of the house. It's in Edward Street. And it goes on and on. So there he is. He's looking for accommodation. I wonder whether there's an owner out there would like to take Bruce Learman in. Maybe you'd like to think very carefully about that. Backpackers and electricians say that there are major safety issues at many of the Australian rural solar sites. Well, wouldn't you know, this is just like pink bats. We get into this evangelist drive to put in solar panels to save the world from global boiling. And what happens? Oh, we go about it the wrong way and they are a danger to life. These are remote sites where these solar panel farms have gone in. And apparently some of these co-workers have raised serious concerns with the owners, saying that they're likely to be a fire hazard. They could be electrocuted. They are really, really concerned. And we've got about 10,000 people from overseas working on these solar farms, according to a story on the ABC News website today. But the electricians are saying the same thing. Apparently, 15 new large commercial solar farms were completed across Australia last year, 15, the majority owned by global renewable energy and financial services companies. Yeah, you'd love to start digging down into that. But the workers and electrical trade union officials are now telling the ABC there are major safety issues with the way labour is managed at many of the remote solar sites. You can tell what the next story will be. I hope I'm very wrong. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
Be a part of the conversation.
I want representation I can trust.
Have your say.
Biden isn't doing enough.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Let's get to our next guest. Well, on the COVID front, this is really important for you to know. This could be the most crucial set of official admissions about the dangers of COVID vaccines we've ever seen in Australia. Maybe one of the most damning official admissions the world has ever seen. The Royal Australian College of General Practitioners has released a paper this week and sent it to all GPs in the country. That's how confident they are with what they found. They made stunning revelations about the increased risks of heart disease after taking mRNA vaccines. It has also found that the makers provided no long-term data of the side effects possible from these jabs, despite what we heard from many immunologists at the time. The RACGP also reported abnormally high evidence of autoimmune diseases and the promotion of cancerous growth from the vaccines. This is not something out of an independent journalistic journal. This is out of mainstream. This is out of the official report from the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, the same body that urged us all to go and get jabbed. So the conspiracies were not conspiracies after all, is my point. And the claims made and censored on social media were not untruths, as we were told either. Let's unpack some of this and some of the other big stories making news in Australia today. With the help of One Nation Senator Malcolm Roberts, the senator has spent 7 years in the Senate chamber. You'd think he'd be sick of it by now. Before that, he studied engineering at the University of Queensland and then worked in the coal industry. He founded the Galileo movement to lobby against the Gillard government's carbon tax. Senator Malcolm Roberts, welcome back to TNT Radio.
Thank you, Chris. And you're doing a fabulous job. You're on fire.
Yeah, Can you believe this?
That was a fabulous summary. I don't think there's much more I can add. But basically, you're right. These are the people who pushed it onto people right across the country, untested, not properly tested at all. And now they're saying, whoops, there's something wrong with it. And there's one thing you didn't mention.
Yeah.
The person who wrote this article, and it's been pushed around by the Royal Australian College of GPs, is a very senior person, an eminent person. He's no lightweight. And they're now admitting it. That they previously gave advice to just go and get it, shove it into you, and now they're saying, whoops, hang on just a minute. I think they're getting ready to walk themselves back.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised as if there's a follow-up on all of this from that same organisation, because it was some of the most eminent immunologists in Australia, and I won't mention any names because they'll come and sue my pants off and I don't have the money, but some of the most eminent immunologists in the country who also were either telling porkies or they were gulping down the stuff that they were told by Big Pharma, but they were telling us time and time again that what has happened with these mRNA vaccines at the time, and they were telling me time and time again on Sky News, they were saying, oh no, they've just worked at breakneck speed to do the sort of research on the vaccine that normally takes 5 or 6 years. Bullshit.
Yes, it is bullshit. There's something else you need to know. Two other things that came out almost at the same day. One is officially from Florida, the Surgeon General of Florida, Ladapo, I think, or Lepato. He's a very strong man, very capable man, Surgeon General. He's now getting an inquiry up into the excess mortality.
Right.
And he wants to find the cause. This is not just to check the numbers. This is to actually determine the causes of the excess mortality. That's
right.
Really significant.
Significant that your Senate has been the first parliamentary chamber in the world to come up with an inquiry on excess deaths. Now, I don't know whether there's time in that inquiry to come up with the definitive reason for excess deaths, but it's a great breakthrough.
Oh, yes, it is. And we've had several breakthroughs since last October. The mood changed. And the reason why it changed, Chris, is because Anthony Albanese said, I'm not going to keep my promise on a royal commission. I'm going to give you a whitewash. Since that day, the Greens and the Labor Party have not been game to oppose. I put up the first motion, which required an inquiry to develop the terms of reference for a possible royal commission. And normally they would have been fighting against me, but they whistled it through because they didn't want to be seen to be opposing it. We've had several things now go through in the same way. The other thing that came out yesterday, Chris, is I got an email yesterday from AMPS, the Australian Medical Professional Society.
Uh-huh.
And they said that one of their members, I'm sorry, I can't remember her second name. She's a wonderful, wonderful doctor. I should know her because I've met her several times. She's very impressive. She has gone into the Pfizer data on the tests, which were not done by the TGA, which were not done by the Food and Drug Administration of America, which were done in-house by Pfizer, she has uncovered massive numbers of deaths that Pfizer hid.
Right. Pfizer in the hid testing of deaths. Their vaccines.
Yes.
Wow. We'll follow that up. I really want to follow that up. But
I
just
put
quote
you in touch
this
with AMPS.
Well, let's do that. I want to quote from this report. It's so important that people understand that this is straight down mainstream official documentation and findings. Multiple studies have shown an increased risk of myocarditis after vaccination with mRNA spike protein. mRNA vaccines can result in spike protein expression in muscle tissue, the lymphatic system, cardiomyocytes, and other cells after entry into circulation. I want to play for you what Dr. John Campbell is saying now that this has been released from Australia. He says it's significant because it's now in the official literature and says, among other admissions, it's confirmation that the vaccines were purely experimental. Have a listen.
But again, admitting now the vaccines were approved without long-term safety data, despite the assurances that we were given. This is why I'm so cross. You know, we were given these assurances. We were naive enough to believe it. And it's turned out to be 180 degrees, the opposite of what we were told. The end of that age of deference for sure.
It's no wonder, Malcolm Roberts, that we have under 10% taking any kind of vaccine at the moment.
It is. It's certainly no wonder. And I think the other thing to note is Professor John Skerritt told me in answer to questions in Senate estimates that I put to him, he admitted that the TGA approved these injections on the basis of the FDA approving them in America. Knowing full well at the time, it gets worse, Chris, knowing full well at the time that the Food and Drug Administration did not do the testing and it relied, as it had previously said, on the results from Pfizer.
Yeah.
Pfizer.
Yeah.
And then we see 8 months after he resigned as head of TGA, Professor Skerritt signed up to be a member of the board of directors of Medicines Australia, which is the pharmaceutical industry lobby group in this country.
Yeah. Look, when you start joining the dots, it's atrocious what we're now finding out. But, you know, what they were signing up to was agreeing with what the Americans say they got from Pfizer, but what they were getting from Pfizer was censored because they weren't telling us the truth.
Correct. And now Dr. Jacinthe, I've forgotten her second name, is now saying that she has uncovered massive deaths in that Pfizer data that they've hidden. Remember, they tried to keep this from the people, and the judge said you will release the data every month, a certain amount. They wanted to keep it for 75 years. And by the way, I've got to put a plug in for Dr. Campbell.
Please. Hasn't he done some great work?
Well, not only that, he shows some real human courage because he admitted that at first he wasn't on this bandwagon. And then what happened was he saw the data and he started waking up. And it's a brave man that can admit that he's wrong. And has done exactly that. And that's hats off to him.
Well, I fell for it hook, line, and sinker during the pandemic. And I have said many, many times in this program, I got most of what I said wrong. And that's because I was interviewing, you know, eminent immunologists and believed every word they said. I won't be doing that ever again. I want to change this tack if we can and change our topicality, because I've got Richard from Sydney ringing on our talkback line and he wants to raise a completely different issue, but one that I'm sure you'd like to weigh into as well. Richard, thank you for calling.
Chris, is that Senator from Queensland?
Malcolm Roberts it is.
Okay, very good. Keep up the work, good Senator. I follow you for a number of years, including a late friend of ours, Bob Spanswick, who passed away last year. So I'll keep up the good work. Look, two things. The decision yesterday by the Albanese government and Senator Wong, our foreign minister, to signal that they were going to recognise the Palestinian state as a means to bringing the ends to this conflict in the Middle East between a terrorist organisation, Hamas, and the state of Israel, legitimately defending itself from a terrorist attack on 7th of October last year. There are some stories around in the papers and everything saying that there's been some consultation that Senator Wong spoke to a number of people. Well, let's draw this out a little bit. Who was the people she spoke to? She spoke to the Americans, she spoke to the UK, she spoke to the Spanish, she spoke to the Irish. Fine. Part of NATO, part of EU. Okay. You might get some stories there, you might get some stuff. But then she spoke to two people in Southeast Asia. She spoke to Malaysia and Indonesia. The two principal countries, which I might add, let's have a bit of facts here, both refuse to sign the 1951 Geneva Convention on Refugees. Thus, we have a problem of people smuggling through those countries into Australia. They also happen to be two of the biggest Muslim countries in the world. So why aren't they taking a large amount of the refugees out of Palestine? That's the first point. The second point, what this will do is Alan Dershowitz said, Why Terrorism Works, in his book. This will reward Hamas and Hezbollah with an outcome. And remember this, the organization behind this here is the state, the Republic of Iran. It thrives in chaos. And the chaos it's created for the West is the West is looking the other way when it's not looking the enemy in front or internally. And the last thing I want to say on this matter, since this 9th of October, the disgraceful behavior outside the Opera House, I've never seen such anti-Jewism, anti-Semitism, and hate on our streets. We'll have it again this weekend in Sydney and across every major city again, and not one hate speech person has been charged. When I was working in federal law enforcement 32 years, we were picking up then, reporting, and this is reported in Parliament, so I'm not giving you away secrets, and I wouldn't because I'm bound by that. We were picking up Hezbollah and the Hamas terrorist supporters coming into the country. Not one prosecution in 30 years, not one of these organisations. But we continue to look the other way. If we allow either Ukraine or Israel to go, you better watch out and be ready for what will come next, because they won't stop with the Israelis or the Ukrainians. They'll come for you next. So I just say to Australians, you better start ringing the bells of your federal MPs and senators and demand that our laws be enforced. I don't care what your background is. You come here, there are a set of laws. You obey those laws. And if you don't think things are changing, the announcement yesterday of a Muslim party was going to run at the next federal elections should be enough of an alarm bell. This is a Judeo-Christian country with an Aboriginal culture, and that's our history. Islam is incompatible in its present form in our Western Judeo-Christian democracy. And we have to decide to defend it. And if we won't defend it, no one else will.
Okay, Richard, I've got to leave it there. I've run out of time, but mate, good to have you on the program. Thank you very much for that. Malcolm Roberts, I've got to take a quick break and I'll be back in just a second right here on TNT.
TNT's James Freeman.
According to reports in the press, Ian had liked posts from BNP, that's the British National Party leader Nick Griffin, and posts from Tommy Robinson, which included a photo of a pig on a spit that suggested holding hog roasts outside of mosques during Ramadan, whilst another included a video of the Quran being burned in the streets of the Netherlands. Now, whatever your views are about Islam, I don't think it's a great look to be engaging with this type of content if you are serious about becoming a member of parliament. Not given that, you know, if you're successful in that role and you get elected, then you're elected to represent all of the constituents in your area. And regardless of where you live, that will include people from the Muslim community.
James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
At the top of the hour, we'll keep on top of the news.
It's the most important thing we can do.
On today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I've got Malcolm Roberts with me. Malcolm, still on major health issues. UK paediatrician Dr. Hilary Cass has warned the world against using puberty blockers on children wanting to transition their gender. Her recommendations will be adopted in full by the Tory government. And yesterday, in the UK, all private clinics agreed to stop using puberty blockers as well. Where's the sleepy Albo government in backward Australia on this topic, Malcolm?
Too busy appealing to people who think that you can change gender. You can't change gender, Chris, and that's something that we've been speaking about for many, many years.
Yeah.
We've got a major change in the Senate. We've got a major... Usually when I speak... I was the first to really start speaking about this.
Yeah,
the Greens would swamp me. Greens would swamp me with vitriol. Four or five of them. Last time I spoke, we had five on our side and one Green, and all he could do was rant and rave. You know, there's been a change because we've been speaking up. People in the street now, families are now talking about it, whereas before they were afraid to talk about it because they'd be put down as being what, transphobic or whatever it is. Now the Albanese government is the only thing that's afraid to talk about it.
Mm.
And we've got to protect our kids from mutilation and kids from chemical castration is basically what they're doing. They're wiping these kids' chances of having their own children in the future. They're wiping that. Yeah. They're destroying these children's development. You know, adolescence is a time when the brain develops. It remyelinizes. And this is crucial. And hormones are being produced. We're destroying children's future. And we're causing children, you know, Chris, we tell, the health people, the transgender people tell kids, you can change your gender. And then if you don't like it, you can reverse it. Well, when kids do that and they come back and say, I don't like it, I want to reverse. Sorry, mate, you can't reverse it.
Yeah.
I mean, and then they go and commit suicide. This is killing children.
Yep, sure is. And we don't have the psychological counselling in place for them to receive, which can get them through that very bad place that they find themselves in.
Chris, this is being wrongly diagnosed. It's a mental health condition.
Yeah.
In adolescence, a mental health condition. Children need love, they need support, and they need counseling.
Yeah.
And they'll come through it. So many children in adolescence for many, many years wonder if they should be someone else. But now we're forcing them because the parents cannot say, no, hang on just a minute, little Johnny, just think about that for a few years. And then they grow out of it.
Yeah.
You know? Instead, we've got to, in Victoria, you've got to affirm the child's wishes and that'll end up with your children dead.
They should close that clinic at the Royal Children's Hospital, quick smart. Now, I'm speaking to an expert this hour about this outrageous digital ID law, which passed the Senate last week without debate. But you've got a day of protest being planned, have you?
Yes, Sunday, May the 5th, protests in every capital city. And Chris, I want to thank the citizens of Australia because when the Labor Party introduced this into the Senate and then passed it through the Senate, not only no debate, not one word of debate, the guillotine stopped any debate whatsoever. Amendments were introduced, no debate on the amendments to the bill. But the really good thing is on the Wednesday night after that, I was gutted. I was just, you don't expect this in a democracy.
No.
I didn't get back into my house until about 1 a.m. flying up from Canberra. Next morning, I walked into my office in Brisbane and my staff are happy. And I said, what's going on? And they said, mate, it was supposed to go to the House of Representatives to be passed through the House because the House was held back late. It didn't get to the House. And I think what's going on is the Labor Party is absolutely terrified of the backlash they got. Katie Gallagher got something like, in 23 hours, she got something like 300,000, what was it, comments. Sorry, 300,000 views. 300,000 views, sorry. And she got thousands of comments and she got 350 likes, just a tiny fraction. She got smashed. David Pocock said, well, I didn't vote for the guillotines. What he didn't say, that he voted for the bill. Yeah. So people who voted for the bill are really getting tailed up by social media. And they're getting, we urge people to, and others urge people to call the members of parliament and express their views. And I think the Labor Party is running scared. So what I'm saying to people is there are two ways we'll defeat this. Call your local MP. Call them.
Bombard them.
Bombard them. Be pleasant, be firm, and come to our, and second thing, come to our Sunday, May the 5th rallies in Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, I think Adelaide and Perth. Come to those and get your voice told. Albanese, mate, when Morrison introduced the cash ban bill,
yep,
we took it upon ourselves to mobilize the crossbench in the Senate at the time. We got the Greens on board. We called the Labor Party. The Labor Party and the Liberal Party colluded as a uni party to pass it through the House of Representatives. It came to the Senate. It was consigned to a Senate inquiry. We got hold of the grassroots members of the Liberal Party and Labor Party, Craig, Chris, and we got them to bombard their MPs. That bill just sat in that Senate inquiry for months, and then I moved a motion saying, get it out of the Senate, and it got out of the Senate. My motion got up. So when the people get involved, the politicians are scared of you, and that's exactly what we should be doing. You know, a totalitarian regime, the people are scared of the government. In a true democracy, which Australia is not, a true democracy because the people have been asleep, in a true democracy, the government is scared of the people. Make sure the MPs of all parties are scared of you. Call them up and tell them exactly what you want them to do to vote against the digital ID.
Yep. Digital ID rally, May the 5th in various capital cities. And just quickly on another globalist effort to ban cash and control the world by having us all connected electronically. Is the Australian Labor government being conned on this as well? Is they trying to con us? What's happening with that?
Well, the Uni Party, the Liberal Party and the Labor Party are both trying to get rid of cash. Yeah, that's right. What they're doing is the banks are cutting out, ripping out ATMs. They're shutting down branches in regional areas and branches in suburbs across the country, Chris. And what they're doing is they're making it very hard to get cash. And so the people will switch more to digital. But what we've seen in recent months is an increase in cash because people are saying, you want to take my cash away? Like hell, I'll start using cash.
Good.
So what they're doing is they're saying, I'll forgo the ease of digital and get the security of cash.
Great stuff. People power. We've seen it before in this country. People power can make a difference and people need to have confidence in their own power, don't they?
Yes, exactly. But they need MPs. Like us to actually stand up with them and for them. We have opposed this digital identity since Morrison. That's the other thing. People don't realize that while Labor introduced it into the Senate, this was introduced into the Parliament by the Morrison Liberal government.
Yeah.
The Morrison Liberal government. And so both parties introduced it. Now, what's happened is we've kicked up such a fuss about digital ID right from the start. We made videos about digital ID. Some of those videos have gone around the world. Now the Liberal Party voted with us against the digital identity bill a couple of weeks ago. But some of the senior Liberals were absent. They were abstaining.
Mm.
Got something caught in my throat. So what I'm saying is exactly what you said. People power. Let's show them on May 5th.
Great stuff.
And keep using cash because that's what keeps cash.
Very true. Malcolm Roberts, thank you very much for your time and have yourself a good weekend. We look forward to what you're doing in the near future.
Thank you very much, Chris. You too.
Good on you. The Queensland Senator, Malcolm Roberts from One Nation, and May 5th is the date. We'll talk further about digital IDs and why they're evil and why we still have a chance to block them, which is a fantastic outcome. If it can, if people power assembles and we make a difference, we can do it. We can do it. Got to get to the newsroom for an update. This is TNT.
Newsflash! Newsflash!
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The Australian Capital Territory government has enacted significant reforms to its jury laws in the wake of the Bruce Lehrman trial's mistrial, which was prompted by a juror's independent research. Southern Russia and northern Kazakhstan are experiencing their worst spring flooding in decades, leading to the evacuation of tens of thousands of residents as rivers burst their banks. O.J. Simpson, the controversial figure and former NFL player, has passed away at the age of 76 after a battle with cancer.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops.
For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Now, how do you fancy bank holiday weekend at a music festival for the Truth and Freedom Tribe? Well, with 30 awake artists, including Danny Rampling and Mobius Loop, an all-night acoustic fire pit, bouncy castles and Hope Sussex for the children, plus loads of amazing stalls and scrumptious food vendors, this is an event not to be missed by anyone who's aware of the truth of the world. A Stand in the Park and the Light Paper presents Stand in the Light, a truth musical festival in the beautiful Lake District on May the 24th to the 27th. You get 4 days of camping and full access to the whole festival for just £60 plus booking fee. Children under five come free. There is no better bargain anywhere for our UK audience. Visit our website now to make sure you don't miss what is going to be a brilliant weekend. That is standinthelight.uk. Standinthelight.uk. Well, as many TNT viewers and listeners would be aware, the Albanese government's digital ID bill was rammed through the Senate, as we've just discussed with Malcolm Roberts on March the 27th. No debate. A vote to debate the legislation tied 33 apiece. Can you believe that they call that a democracy? The bill itself went to a vote and sailed through Parliament with 33 yeas from an alliance of Labor, Greens, Jackie Lambie Network and independent senators. My next guest will provide his legal analysis of the actual legislation, which I'm telling you, when you finish with this particular interview, you will be going along to this rally as well on May the 5th. Jordan Ditloff is the Federal Secretary of the Libertarian Party and a law graduate working in civil litigation. As Federal Secretary of the Libertarian Party, Jordan has worked tirelessly to help guide the party through the challenges of constitutional and structural reform and the adoption of their new party name. Jordan maintains a keen interest in policy and is in legislation before the parliament and in the community. He joins me live from Ballarat in Victoria. Jordan Ditloff, welcome to TNT.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris.
Before we talk about that, we should fess up right from the beginning before people start saying to me on the chat line, oh, do you know Jordan's past? I don't think you're hiding from your past, but you've had a previous criminal history and a drug addiction. Very briefly, how's that all turned out? And 9 years later, where are you up to?
Well, it feels sometimes, Chris, like a lifetime ago, but I always like to say that you don't have to live in the past, but it's always good to have it in the rear view so that you don't go back there. And for me, the last 9 years has been a story of making amends for what I did wrong. I've been working hard to repay victims gradually over time and increasing that as my ability to do so has grown. And the last 8 years has seen me finish a business degree I started in prison and then complete a postgraduate law degree. So it's been a fairly roller coaster of a ride, you could say.
Yeah. Great stuff. I believe in redemption. People need to be given a chance, and some of us can take that chance and make it work for ourselves. All right. According to the Australian government, the Digital ID Bill will strengthen the current digital ID accreditation scheme and provide a legislative framework for the current digital ID system to expand, boost privacy, protect consumers and strengthen the governance of the scheme. That's the greatest lot of BS I've ever heard.
Yeah, look, I always say it's a bit like you see countries like North Korea and others where they have to tell you how democratic and free they are. If anything has to tell you that there's a specific section in this bill that says this is voluntary, then alarm bells should probably be ringing. You don't have to be a lawyer to work out that the default is voluntary. And if this bill has to try to stridently trumpet from the rooftops that it's voluntary, you should be suspicious.
Yeah, exactly. The government claims the digital ID system will be voluntary, but the problem with it is, and Malcolm Roberts touched on it before, is that it will be very, very, very difficult to do anything but fall into line, won't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, this will be voluntary in the same sense that cars or electricity or the internet or internet banking are voluntary, in that they will make it such an unavoidable feature of life and commerce and accessing government services that it will be functionally impossible to avoid. So they've been very cheeky and very coy here by saying, oh, look, we're not making it compulsory. You can do whatever you like. But if you want to go and wait in the Centrelink queue for 5 hours or go into Medicare with 200 new friends to wait in line to do anything with respect to government services, then I guess you're just going to have to use a digital ID. Mm.
The digital ID, what kind of information will it collect?
Well, a really wide range. There's provisions in the bill that state there's prohibited characteristics that can't be collected, and they go through all these particular characteristics, including gender, including socioeconomic status. But of course, we know that that's an everyday part of commerce now. Something like 60% or more of daily transactions are done completely online, and we know that that data is constantly being captured and monetized. And the bill can say that that information can't be used in a particular way or has to be destroyed immediately. But we know from the many, many instances of hacks and privacy breaches and data breaches that there is no taking for granted that that is happening effectively or permanently.
See, that last point is very interesting. Anything that the government collects, bearing in mind they have, well, certainly when it comes to Centrelink, for most of the last 20 years, they've had an antiquated digital collection system. They've had an antiquated digital framework and service system, which has had to be, you know, revamped a number of times. You just wouldn't trust government to keep your information safe, would you?
No, not at all. And I mean, you only have to look at the government's forays into automated and digital services and think of the robo-debt crisis.
Yeah.
To think of how this might go. I don't think you have to be a libertarian to be very cynical about what the government's performance on this will be. But as it happens, the libertarians are very cynical. And this bill, I mean, you've got companies like Optus recently that had massive data breaches. They're a very sophisticated, very profitable company that can afford and invest in the best security there is to buy. And the reality is that hackers and data miners will always be one step ahead. This will represent a massive honeypot that there will be huge incentives for hackers and privacy breaches domestically and internationally to target.
Yeah, they will just say to themselves, well, now we've got the digital ID framework. We know where we're going to get the best information, the most information, the private information, all in one spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it's not to say that there aren't ways to do that now with physical ID, but it is a lot harder. This system will essentially be putting the fox in charge of the hen house in a way. You're making it much easier for people to do business and to provide and verify their identity. But the other side of that double-edged sword is that you're making it much, much easier for online thieves, if they do gain access to digital ID, to do the same thing without the checks and balances of actually having to see someone in person to verify the quality. You know, if you're looking at a counterfeit banknote or a counterfeit passport, even the very best counterfeits have tells and giveaways that can be detected. If you're dealing with a completely digital form of ID, then if someone gets the keys to that, how can you disprove they are who they say they are?
Yeah. Are you concerned digital IDs could be a framework used to target or penalise critics of the government?
Well, look, at this stage, there's nothing to indicate that it will go that far. But again, it doesn't take a lot of imagination or a lot of awareness of things that have gone on recently around the world. If you look at the way the trucking rallies and protests in Canada, for instance, were handled, that's just one example of the way in which even just existing banking controls can be manipulated and harnessed and weaponized very quickly by government should they decide that's warranted. And we as libertarians would be very, very distrustful. We would say that Australians should know at least as much, if not more, about their government than the government should know about them.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, some of the critics are also saying, you know, it could be used to employ financial penalties, restrict travel or property ownership. But if you are like, and I come back to that Canadian example, if you are starting to create a headache or a nightmare or a migraine for government, and they've got access to this sort of stuff, don't tell me they won't be sitting down somewhere and working out how they can use that to get back at you.
Yeah, well, certainly that's one view. But the thing to keep in mind as well is that there's always the second and third order consequences of this. And that is that companies and businesses who are increasingly providing government-like services or services on which we rely are also very likely to use data collected by the government, by this digital ID scheme, to discriminate, to target offers, to restrict offers. And if a company, on the basis of information that it knows about you through, at the moment it's a digital ID, but it could wind up incorporating digital driver's licenses, could incorporate a whole range of information about your behavior, your criminal record, and that's obviously something that I think about a lot. The more information the government has on you and the more information is collected by private companies which use this framework, then the more potential there is for, I suppose, that envelope to be pushed to start restricting, for example, access to credit, to start restricting access to many services and goods, like such as insurance, is another great example. If insurers, if insurers had an opportunity to know more about you before they issued you an insurance policy, I can promise you they would take that opportunity.
Just off topic, the Libertarian Party, I speak to a lot of members of the Libertarian Party here, and including John Ruddick, the leader of the Libertarian Party in New South Wales. The Libertarian Party in the United States is the third largest party in America. Is that where you see the Libertarian Party heading, the third largest party in Australia?
Look, we would certainly hope so. I'm not going to sit here and say that that's going to happen tomorrow. We've, if you look at the recent results in Dunkley and Mulgrave in Victoria at the federal and state by-election level, we've got a long way to go, but we've put in a lot of really hard work within the party structurally. We've invested a lot in our members, in our constitution, and in our decentralised structure. So you talked about John Ruddick before. New South Wales has gone ahead in leaps and bounds. We've got the Cook by-election coming up on Saturday. So if any of your listeners live in the Cook electorate and are going to be casting a vote, we'd strongly recommend casting a vote for our candidate there, Vinay. But I do think that our party's been around for 20 years. We're not a fad or a fly-by-night phenomenon. We've survived the two decades of fairly concerted attempts at times to eliminate us. You might remember the Ruddick and Commonwealth case in the High Court where the Liberal Party claimed that they owned politically the word liberal, which is a fairly illiberal thing to do. But I would say they gave us a gift when they didn't intend to, because it forced our party to think about what was a name that would represent who we are and what we believe in. Yeah. And these days, as I said, when they objected to our new name because they claimed then to own the LP initials of their logo and said we weren't able to use that, that these days nobody wants to be confused with the Liberal Party, at least for us.
Yeah, the fact that you've made it uniform around Australia has got to be a good thing, I think. All the very best. Good to have you on the program. And thank you very much for your insight into digital IDs, which I hope and think that people power will win out in the end.
Thank you, Chris. I hope to join you again soon.
Good on you. Jordan Dytloff, Federal Secretary of the Libertarian Party. Good to have him on the program. And we've got to remember, May the 5th. May the 5th is the big rally in various capital cities. Look it up. Work out exactly where the sites are. I can do that for you as we get closer, and I will. But surely, you know, this is something we need to be part of. We need to protest against, and we need to win. Very important thing to do. Now, he mentioned Saturday's by-election in Cook as a result of Scott Morrison leaving politics. Interesting article coming out of the Daily Telegraph this afternoon on the shenanigans associated with this by-election. Let me read you some of the story that's been published today. Scott Morrison's successor in Cook may on the surface appear all but locked in, but pollsters say there's a chance things could go pear-shaped for the coalition. Mr. Morrison retained the Sutherland Shire electorate with a 12.4% margin in 2022, although down from 19% in 2019 after he picked up almost two-thirds of the two-party preferred vote. It's one of the safest Liberal seats in the country, but voter disenchantment and Labor's decision not to run a candidate could create a perfect storm for the party to actually lose some of their margin, according to pollster Cos Samaras. On one hand, some locals are unhappy with the Liberal Party selection of Simon Kennedy, who did not live in the electorate when he beat out the local mayor and a popular advocate in pre-selection, which Mr. Samaras said could result in low voter turnout. If they're unhappy, they'll probably refrain from voting, is what he's saying, and that seems likely. Voter turnout for by-elections is traditionally lower than a full federal election, but the Australian Electoral Commission said they were concerned by how few people had voted early in Cook and had put out more communication for a single by-election than we've ever done. Now, that's interesting. You can usually tell from pre-votes what kind of turnout you're going to get, and by the sound of it, the turnout's going to be lousy. And is the turnout lousy because of Kennedy's pre-selection? That could be the case. You never go against, and I think Scott Morrison learnt that lesson terribly at the last federal election when he decided to hang on to making decisions and allowed universal decisions to be made instead of by the local branches. And the Liberal Party was upset, and Liberal members were upset in these individual areas and seats. Well, they haven't learnt their lesson, have they? By going ahead and not listening to what local members were saying about who should be the pre-selected candidate, you're only making a rod for your own back. Now, according to Commissioner Tom Rogers, the early voting numbers we're seeing are down by approximately 11.2% based on the same period in the 2022 federal election and nearly 13% for the same period in the 2023 referendum. Down 13% is major. Whilst it may be that more people vote on by-election day this time around, typically if someone casts their vote early in one election, they'll do so in the next one. This is why the numbers we're seeing makes us worry about low participation. On the other hand, the decision not to run a Labor candidate in Cook, despite candidate Simon Earle picking up 37.6% in the vote in the 2022 election, could also send votes to the Greens or the other minor party in an independent candidate. So who knows? It's going to be a lucky dip, this by-election, and maybe the coalition mightn't fare as well as they think they should. We'll keep across that very, very keenly over the weekend and tell you all about it on Monday. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
Here's a bushfire fact. Bushfires can occur without warning. So if you're travelling during bushfire season, here are three simple steps to remember. 1. Check the fire danger rating before you go. The higher the fire danger rating, the more dangerous the conditions. It may be safer to replan your trip. 2. Think about the area you're going to and what you would do if a fire started. How would you escape the area if you needed to? And where would you go? Check if there's a neighbourhood safer place. 3. It's dangerous to drive through smoke or fire. If you can't find a way to avoid the fire, park in a cleared area, face the car towards the fire, and turn the engine off. Then lie on the floor and cover yourself to protect yourself from radiant heat. Live bushfire ready. For more helpful tips, visit myfireplan.com.au today.
Right, I've got cancer. I've been trying to tell the rest of you, but no one's listening. And I don't just mean you, ears, eyes. Would you look in the damn toilet for once? Hands, roll those sleeves and take a sample. And legs, trot off to the doctor to get me looked at. Because bowel cancer can be successfully treated when detected early. Now look who's finally woken up.
Focused on the facts. Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You know, there's plenty of other stories that I wanted to get through, but the Bruce Lerman story is a funny one and an interesting one in that what we're hearing about Bruce Lerman is quite contrary to the way his persona was portrayed in the trial, you might remember. But now we're seeing him walk across the road with, you know, women in body-hugging dresses, and we're hearing about him having loud karaoke in his North Sydney palatial apartment and all sorts of other bits and pieces. If there is not a mini-series in this, or if there is not some kind of major movie, I'm a monkey's uncle. Like, seriously, this is built for it. It's quite extraordinary. Every single week we're hearing something associated with it that we haven't heard before. So I just think that that's exactly what's going to happen. I do want to tell you a couple of other things before we get going. This is big money. After 60 years developing apartments on the East Coast, Harry Triguboff, he is the multi-billionaire developer from Meriton, has found his largest ever buyer with a Chinese-born entrepreneur purchasing 165 units across four residential towers. That's just an extraordinary thing. All of a sudden, someone turns up from China and says, excuse me, I'd like to buy not one apartment, I'd like to buy 165, please. The buyer, who has permanent Australian residency, has tipped the entire lot of 165 apartments, mainly two-bedroom units, by the way, into Meriton's rental pool. So it's not as if he's buying them for the Chinese army or he has anyone in particular that he'd like to put in them. He's actually putting them in the Meriton rental pool after paying around $1 million for each unit since he began acquiring them 3 years ago. So a three-year campaign of purchasing 165 units at $1 million a pop. Meriton sales director James Sielpas says he has done purchases of blocks of 40 units, 50 units, and 20 units. He rings and he says he likes them, and away he goes. He's been to the sites, he's done his due diligence, and sees how well the unit blocks have been maintained. The sales rep said the buyer has met Meriton founder Mr. Triguboff, who is worth $26 billion, by the way. He's met him a couple of times. He likes the fact that Harry retains some units in each block himself, meaning all apartments are well maintained. The Chinese buyer, who is based in Sydney, has purchased Meriton's towers in the inner and western suburbs, including Zetland, Mascot, Lidcombe, and Pagewood. Now, that is specific. Zetland, Mascot, Lidcombe, Pagewood. So he sees those four areas as areas that are doing nothing but going up. He is now looking at acquiring more investment. Hey, 165 is not enough. He's now looking at acquiring more investment apartments on Queensland's Gold Coast, where Meriton is developing the Cypress Palms, Australia's second tallest residential tower. Is that not just extraordinary? I find that just amazing that we've got Chinese influence or Chinese money like that in the suburbs of our cities. Now, there is a story too that I won't get time to read to you or tell you about, but I can tell you that Ross Greenwood has written a story which you can catch in the Weekend Australian about Kerry Stokes parting possibly with Channel 7. Now, mainstream media, in particular mainstream television, is doing it tough in 2024. Advertising revenue is down to buggery. And the likes of Kerry Stokes probably looks at something like Channel 7 and says, where's the future? You know, the future is in, for instance, radio is the future right here. It's digital. The same has occurred in the UK and the US. This is the growth industry. And the same with television. People are getting their fix of TV through streaming services, and there are any number of streaming services to choose from now, and other ways that you watch your television, including this way. It's not about turning on and watching what they schedule for you on Channel 7. And maybe Ross Greenwood has heard the whisper, and he might be spot on. Knowing Ross the way I do, he doesn't normally go off without some kind of evidence. So he might be on the money that Kerry Stokes could be selling out of Channel 7. Where does that leave those who are invested in Channel 9, do you think? Maybe there's something moving in that, in reference to that down the track. Now, next week on the program, I want to tell you, I got a stack of terrific guests coming up next week on the program. We're going to talk to Johnny Conroy. Now, Johnny Conroy is one of those farmers, like many farmers at the moment, who are going through sheer hell because of being situated next to a solar farm located in Victoria. And he'll tell us the whole drama that he's going through and how the insurance company that he's working with to insure his own farm is quoting him astronomical figures, because the problem is, you know, it's a normal farm, but because he's next to a solar farm, the danger is that something could trigger on his property and it would cost the insurance company so much more money if the solar farm was affected. And these people have been caught in a trap where they simply can't insure their assets on their own farm. So Johnny Conroy will be my guest on Monday, along with Rene Heath as well. And then on Tuesday, we're going to catch up with Andrew Phelan, who is a China expert. He's going to talk to us about whether China still poses a threat to the Indo-Pacific. So stacks to look forward to on the program next week. Sonia Poulton is coming up. She'll be your host, leading straight after the news. You have a fabulous weekend. I intend to. Tell your friends and family. Come here on Monday on TNT.